This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Busson.
Hi, I'm Jamie Busson. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss facial plastic surgery with plastic surgeon Dr. Michael Brandt. We'll find out how to heal both ends of the leash with veterinarian and author Dr. Doug Coward. We'll discover how hyperbaric oxygen treatment can help with CTE with athlete William Person. And lastly, we'll learn how to work towards sobriety with life coach Chris Nahara. Before we get to that, here's your Tonic Quick Shot. You may have heard the term superager. These are the people 80 years and older whose memories are as sharp as someone 30 years younger. For the past 25 years, researchers at Northwestern Medicine have been studying them to find out why. According to Dr. Sandra Weintraub from Northwestern University, the most surprising clues come from looking directly at their brains. Some superagers show no signs of the usual brain changes linked to aging or Alzheimer's disease, like plaques and tangles. Others do have them, but their brains seem to resist the damage. Scientists believe there are two key factors at work: resistance, not developing brain buildup, and resilience, staying sharp despite it. Brain scans also show that superagers have a thicker outer brain layer and more special neurons tied to memory and social behavior. Interestingly, most superagers are highly social and outgoing, suggesting that staying connected might help keep the brain strong. Dr. Weintraub says this research proves that having an exceptional memory in old age is possible and could help future treatments for Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia.
Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: The Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today.
I'll be joined by Dr. Michael Brandt in a moment, but first, a little bit of business.
Does your reflection match how you feel, or are stubborn areas holding you back? At Form, Face, and Body, they specialize in restoring your youthful glow and sculpting the body you desire so your outer appearance reflects your inner vitality. Visit formfacebody.ca and see how they can help you rediscover your confidence. Call 416-447-6176 to schedule your complimentary consultation and reclaim your vitality.
Dr. Michael Brandt is a highly sought-after specialist exclusively focused on facial cosmetic plastic surgery. Driven by a passion for artistry and precision, he brings forth a wealth of experience in facial rejuvenation procedures to Form, helping his patients rediscover their confidence and radiance. Dr. Brandt's journey to expertise began with a specialization in head and neck surgery at Western University's Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry. His pursuit of excellence led him to secure the top international fellowship in facial plastic and reconstructive surgery at the renowned University of Michigan. As one of the select few surgeons in Canada certified by the American Board of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, his credentials speak volumes about his expertise and unwavering dedication to his craft. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Brandt. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
So last time you were on the show some months ago, we discussed something that was kind of germane to both of us: hair transplants. But we're getting, and I know you do a lot of those, but we're going to go right into your wheelhouse today and talk about facial surgery. Sound like a plan?
Sounds great.
So many people think that a facelift only means tightening the skin, but I understand that's not true. Can you explain what a modern facelift actually involves?
Absolutely. You know, the old idea of just pulling and yanking on the skin and hoping for the best, that is really long gone. Today's facelifts really focus on the deeper layers of the face, something called the SMAS layer. So we're lifting the foundation and we're not just smoothing the wallpaper. The skin at the end is sort of gently redraped, and that's why things are really looking way more natural than they ever have. Nobody really wants to look like they're stuck in a wind tunnel anymore.
So that layer that you just alluded to, is that muscle? Is that fat? What is that underneath the skin?
So the SMAS layer is really the lining that goes over top of the muscles. So if we can grab that lining that lies over top of the muscles, then that really allows us to redrape everything over top of that area and get sort of the perfect facelift.
Is that part of the dermis, or is it another type of cell?
No, it's way deeper to the dermis. So beneath the skin sort of sits all the different fat layers that descend as we get a little bit older. And then the SMAS layer sits immediately over top of all of the muscles of the face.
As we age, does that layer, the SMAS layer, does that change?
It descends a little bit and it gets a little looser over time, but doesn't change as much as sort of the more surface level structures.
Is everybody a good candidate to get a facelift? And if not, what are some of the determining factors?
So, yeah, I mean, it's not typically about age, as you alluded to. Really, it's about anatomy and overall health. And when we meet with our patients, that's really what we're investigating and looking into. You know, I see patients between, 40s and 70s, and some of them want to get rid of sagging skin around their jawline or neck. And if that's the case, and they're healthy and realistic, and they're really tired of pulling their cheeks back in the mirror and saying, if only it stayed like this, then they're usually a pretty good candidate.
Okay, so I'm going to say a word. You tell me if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Blepharoplasty, is that right? Blepharoplasty?
So blepharoplasty, yep, that's an eyelid lift.
Okay, so is that part of a facelift, or is that something different?
It's usually something that's a little different. So the facelift really focuses on the lower face and neck, and the eyelid surgery or upper eyelid lift really would focus on brightening and tightening around the eyes. We can frequently do them together for a full refresh, but they're really different tools in the overall kit. You think of it like renovating a house. A facelift is really restoring the foundation and the walls, and eyelid surgery is still part of the house, but we're just replacing the windows.
Right. And if you're going to do some construction to the house, you might want to get it done at the same time. Totally
right.
Got it.
Absolutely. While you're there, right?
Exactly. Now, having just done some renovations, I hear you. So do you sort of have to turn your mind to whether it's appropriate to do both those surgeries at once? Or is there criteria for that?
So, yeah, it's really about sort of the problem areas that a patient sort of brings to my attention. We don't go necessarily looking for different things to fix when we meet with somebody. We talk about sort of their general concerns. And when both areas are really showing their age, if we just fix the jawline and ignore sort of the heavy lids, then really there's a bit of a mismatch. So we really want to try to achieve balance for our patient. And that's really when they get the best result.
So what are the signs of aging that a facelift sort of does the best job of addressing? And what concerns might need other sorts of treatments?
So it's a good question. And there's a lot of sort of misinformation about that. A facelift is really about correcting the jowls and the neck. Sometimes it can also help with sagging cheeks. But when we start getting into, fine lines in the skin, sunspots, skin texture, that's when lasers, peels, and good skincare come in. And when we're talking about volume loss of the face, as we get older, sometimes we lose a little bit of volume. That's where fillers or fat grafting come in. And it's really a team sport. Surgery handles the deeper structures, and then other treatments can help refine all the fine details.
As somebody who lost a fair bit of weight some years ago, back then my skin was elastic. So, the changes to the fat around my face, the skin sort of, I'll call it bouncing back. You probably have a technical term for it. And that was fine. But as I'm getting older, I'm noticing, some of the extra space that my skin had to fill is now sort of, how shall I put this? I'm getting sag around the neck. Do you find that a lot of your patients who have weight loss changes are good candidates for facial surgery?
Absolutely. And, you know, part of our general practice at Form, Face, and Body is taking care of patients who've had massive weight loss. And it's a combined effort between all the different surgeons, Dr. Somogyi, myself, and other team members. And yes, you know, patients who lose a lot of weight, eventually you get to the point where the skin isn't quite as elastic as it used to be. And really at that point, surgery really does, you know, surgery is a bit more necessary.
Patients, I understand, often worry about sort of looking fake or plastic. How natural can results be compared to sort of techniques that we may have seen in the past?
Yeah. So, you know, people are always are frequently referencing, you know, Joan Rivers facelift and some of those really windswept, bizarre looking facelifts. And that's really not what we're doing at this point. Really, modern facelifting is about being subtle. We want our patients going out and having their friends say, hey, you look great. Not saying to them, hey, what happened to you? We want people to look like themselves, just a version of themselves that slept well, drinks lots of water, takes great vacations, and feels their best.
When you see somebody who sort of has that sort of overly smooth or plastic looking face, is it because they've sort of countermanded the recommendations of their surgeon and gone farther than perhaps they should have? Or is that just a sign of a poor procedure?
I think it's a combination of factors. I mean, you've got the bus driver and you've got the passenger, right? And
yeah.
Passenger is really directing the bus driver, and the bus driver's not secure enough to tell them or direct them as far as where the bus should be going, then that's really when you run into problems. And that extends beyond just facelifting. It extends into all the non-surgical modalities as well.
Let's talk a bit about recovery. If somebody were to have a facial surgery, how long does it take to recover? And, you know, what are reasonable expectations?
Yeah, so this facelift is not a small procedure. It requires a bit of recovery. You know, the first week is really, you know, Netflix, pajamas, good excuse to avoid working on your emails. Week two, you can head out, you know, sometimes, you know, you can head out with a face covering on. At 3 weeks, most people are feeling better, but the swelling does stick around for a few months. And it's the type of thing where I'll know about it, the patient will know about it, but other people won't really be able to see it. But, you know, it's the type of thing that does take quite some time to totally recover from.
So when you said Netflix for the first week, are you allowed to watch tearjerkers or comedies?
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay. You can cry. You can laugh. It doesn't ruin everything.
No, won't ruin a thing.
Okay. Good to know. What's the difference between a full facelift and a mini lift?
So that's, you know, it's a great question. I mean, really what it boils down to and what I tell patients is both are technically facelifts. A mini lift is really designed for patients who don't have a lot of sagging skin or other problems, and they're looking for more of a lighter refresh, whereas somebody who needs sort of a more extensive renovation, so to speak, is really looking at a full facelift. The challenge is frequently by the time somebody comes in to see me, more often than not, really, we're leaning more towards the full facelift than a mini lift.
Can treatments like fillers or skin tightening replace a facelift?
That's an awesome question. And if they could, then I'd really be out of business. I'd be recommending those same treatments. So really, the facelift is the gold standard to which all of those other treatments are measured. And the real problem is that none of those treatments can even come close. And there are a lot of these treatments on the market, and there's a lot of over-promising and under-delivering relative to these treatments. And, you know, people end up dialing up the energy on the energy devices, doing more frequent treatments and everything else, and really still not getting great results. And the problem is, and a conversation I frequently have with my patients is that the more of those non-surgical treatments you do, then the harder your future facelift will be, in the sense that it can introduce scarring and other problems under the surface of the skin that can compromise your overall facelift result. So, you know, some of those things can help a little bit, but once gravity's taken over and you're getting the sagging and you're getting the excess skin, really, there's no better treatment than the facelift.
So when your partner was on the show, he was explaining how at the first meeting with a prospective patient, he wants to understand their expectations, like what's bothering them the most in terms of surgery done to the body, particularly mm-hmm. after weight loss. Is your procedure the same? Are you discussing hopes and desires, or is it more like your vision for what needs to be improved?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it really focuses on the patient and their identified problem areas, right? As I said earlier, I'm not in the business of searching out for more problems to fix than are necessary, but I will make recommendations if I think they're going to improve the overall result and somebody's really sort of neglecting a discussion over a particular area. For example, if somebody comes in and they're really saying, oh, I need to fix my neck, and you know, that's my primary area of concerns. And then I look at their skin and I'm like, well, you know, we can fix your neck, but really at the end of the day, the neck will be raised up, but you're still going to have a lot of those fine lines and wrinkles. And how much do those bother you? If they don't bother them, not an issue. If they do bother them, then we can start talking about other options to treat those areas as well. So it's really about identifying the problems and the issues that our patients are self-conscious about and trying to make those better for them to really restore their confidence. At the end of the day, these are confidence boosting surgeries. These are surgeries that make somebody feel better, feel like, you know, the person that they have on the inside is really being expressed on the outside. And we try to find that balance.
How educated do you want your patients to be when they come into the office? What kind of research and good questions should they be asking?
So, you know, I think a facelift is like any other major sort of intervention. You should theoretically get a couple of opinions. You should see a few people and you should be as educated as possible. I mean, if you're going out and you're buying a new car, you know, you're going to look into all the details. You're going to refine down what you'd like to do, which sort of car you want, your preferred colors, things like that. I mean, you're not walking into a dealership for, you know, a Honda Civic and walking out with a Ford F-150, right? It just doesn't happen. People do need to know a little bit about what they're getting into, what their concerns are, and just helping to sort of narrow that down a little bit. And that goes a long way to ensuring that you are signing up for the right procedure with the right person to get the right expected result in the end.
Time for one last question, and that is, what do you wish more people understood about facelifts and eyelid surgery?
So it's a great question. You know, these surgeries are subtle and empowering. They're not drastic. And really, at the end of the day, the goal is to look refreshed, not different. It also makes a lot of sense to start the conversation early. It's easier to maintain things than to totally overhaul them. And at the end of the day, the absolute biggest take home is to see a board certified specialist. Your face is really not a place for shortcuts or coupons or Groupons or any of those sort of things.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Michael Brandt. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic.
Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal. Organic or wild-crafted, these oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety, including Argan, Rosehip, or Skin Lover's Blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Cataracts are the leading cause of vision loss in adults over 50. But the good news is they're highly treatable. At Oakville Laser Eye Center, patients receive advanced laser cataract surgery with personalized surgeon-led care. Using cutting-edge technology and customized treatment plans, their expert team helps patients see clearly again to help them rediscover life's details. Book your consultation today at www.oakvillelaser.ca or call 905-337-3736.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Dr. Doug Coward is a dedicated veterinarian at the Animal and Bird Clinic of Mission Viejo. with a deep passion for both traditional and holistic animal care. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the University of Santa Clara, a Master of Science in Animal Ecology, and a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine from UC Davis. Dr. Coward's diverse background includes research on kangaroo parasites in Australia, wildlife exploration across multiple continents, and hands-on experience with a wide range of species, from exotics to beloved family pets. Dr. Coward is currently completing a 3-year book project sharing valuable lessons from his extensive veterinary career and global adventures titled Healing Both Ends of the Leash. Welcome to the show, Doug. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me here, Jamie. I really appreciate it.
I am a late life animal lover, I have to tell you. As a child, we didn't have pets. And then as an adult with kids, I got my first real pet, a dog who has absolutely changed my life. And I imagine that the animals that you spend time with have changed your life too, huh?
Yeah, I started pretty young, got a little beagle when I was 5. I'd collect all kinds of snakes and turtles and stuff that would get loose in the house. And I loved wildlife. I intended to be a wildlife ecologist, but got sidetracked at UC Davis into wildlife and zoological medicine. So I usually've got about 20 different animals or pets hanging around in the house that keeps everybody entertained and happy.
What drove you to write the book?
Mostly frustration. I intended to be a wildlife pilot or vet and found out there were no jobs when I was trying to become a wildlife vet. So I worked for a wildlife dermatologist who did a lot of dogs and cats. And he said I would have more fun in private practice doing, you know, what I'd spent 4 years learning, surgery, medicine, things like that. I did find I enjoyed it. I really love the group. Working in vet hospitals are just a phenomenal group of people, animal lovers. That's all they ever want to do in life is help animals heal. And I enjoyed it, much to my surprise. So I kind of canceled my residency applications for board certification in zoological medicine and took over a older guy's exotic animal wildlife practice. And I had stumbled on a dog at a winery as a young vet, and this was the healthiest looking dog I had ever seen. He's running around like he swallowed a jet engine. And it turned out the wine pourer owned the dog, and my wife and her sister were sampling wine at a Paso Robles winery, and I commented, it's the healthiest dog I've ever seen. And her comment was, if the stupid vets had their way, he'd be dead. So everybody looks at me and points the finger, and I go, hey, I'm sorry. And what had happened is her dog was totally lame at 4 months, with terrible hips. And we were taught to put new hips in or euthanasia. And so she contacted the breeder and was giving the dog back and asked, you know, what would happen to my dog? And said, well, we're going to euthanize him, unfortunately. So she grabbed her dog back. And this is in the 80s. There's no internet. So she'd heard about a chiropractor up in Monterey, California, who had a gift for healing him. And I thought the chiropractor must have done something that they're only skilled to do, put the hips in. So I called her up. She read me the riot act, said, I get him off that stupid food you stupid veterinarians recommend, which makes him sick. And then they need drugs that have side effects. I just give them real food like they're supposed to eat. And I just sat there stunned. I'm going, why didn't I learn this? And then part of me clicked because I'd seen all kinds of wildlife in Africa, India, Nepal, Indonesia, and they didn't eat kibble. They ate real food. And I thought about it a lot and decided I'm going to try it. And so I called up 5 clients I had, all who I'd scheduled their dogs to get new hips for hip dysplasia. Really painful, hard on the dogs, hard on the families, really expensive. And there was only one guy that could do it in the 80s. He had a huge waiting list. So they were all quite willing to feed people food, which is, you know, basically about half some type of meat, hamburger, turkey, fish, and then 40% colorful veggies. Within 30 days, all those 5 dogs that I had suggested get new hips are running and jumping, never had a problem the rest of their lives. And that was a major epiphany. And I thought, one of these days, I've got to write this down. So it took me about 20 years to finally write it down. So that's a long story. Sorry about that, Jamie. It took so long to mention why I recommend whole food therapy.
Yeah, no, sometimes those stories have to be told. So we have guests on the show talk about food as medicine in the context of humans. But the reason I wanted you on the show was exactly what you just explained, that it works for pets as well. So what is it about the foods that we normally give our pets that are so bad for them? Is it just that they're hyper-processed?
Yeah,
or is there something else going on?
Exactly what you said. They're highly processed, ultra-processed. So they're cooked, you know, at a couple hundred degrees for about 30 minutes. And that creates these waste products called activated glycation end products. And they're kind of like cigarettes. You smoke one cigarette, you're okay. You smoke for 10 years or eat kibble for 10 years, you're going to start to have problems of inflammation. So the intestines get inflamed, diarrhea. The joints get inflamed, which is arthritis. The skin gets inflamed, itchy skin. Sometimes the brain gets inflamed and they seizure, and then ultimately cancer. So in some dogs, they're miserable at 4 months on kibble, and others it takes longer. And then the other thing it does, there's preservatives, and that destroys the microbiome, which everybody knows about now. But, you know, 30 years ago, it was hardly mentioned except for us veterinarians who are very careful with it, with rabbits and horses and other animals that depend on the friendly bacteria. So kibble automatically creates a dysbiosis or an upset intestinal tract, and, you know, lets things leak into the bloodstream that shouldn't. And then also those activated glycation end products, I call them age the animal from all the inflammation. So just eliminating kibble and feeding any people food, you're already going to be two steps in the right direction. And then all of our food, you know, every color of fruits or vegetables has all kinds of healing properties. So it's just magic. To me, it's still magic when I see what happens after 30 days on real food. And turns out the same thing happens with people too, you know, as I found in my own health when I started falling apart with autoimmune disease, celiac disease, rheumatoid arthritis, peripheral neuropathy. And all those were completely managed with food, but it took me forever to find a human doctor that put it all together as autoimmune disease, which is rampant in animals too.
But not all dogs, for example, and I'm going to focus on dogs because I love dogs. Not that I dislike cats, but I've particular affinity for dogs, but you know, dogs can't just eat anything though, right? I mean, we can't just feed them like lasagna off the plate, right? Like, we have to be a little bit mindful of what we're giving them, don't we?
Yeah, dogs are great because they're quite happy to eat anything. So it's all or none. If you give some kibble, throw a hamburger, some eggs, some carrots on, that's fantastic. All of that's helping.
You know, my dog happens to like mangoes and fennel, which is both hilarious to me and great because I like mangoes and fennels too. You know, but people have to be careful with what they feed their pets, right? Like you, for example, dogs can't really digest, you know, chocolate, dark chocolate in moderate amounts. And, you know, onions and grapes aren't good for them either, for example, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're super knowledgeable too, because those are really good foods for people. But for dogs, the onions cause the red blood cells to burst. Dark chocolate will make them seizure. And those are, you know, health foods for people. And then the grapes can damage the kidneys. So in the back of my book, I have a chart that goes through all the foods that are anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, good for the heart, things like that. And you just told me I should probably have the ones not to eat. So thank you, Jamie, you enlightened me, something to add to the book. I appreciate
always, it. Always happy to help. So, you know, what was, like, in learning all of this, like, what are the most important takeaways? Like, you've had a world of experience attending for animals, and you're contextualizing that with human care as well. So what are the key takeaways that we'll find in your book?
Yeah, you know, what I found was certainly food is dramatically important to it. And there were some patients that healed, and I just couldn't figure out why. And it turned out to be loving kindness of all things. And, you know, 20 years ago, we didn't know as much about the epigenome, the influences around the DNA. And it turns out that food is a big influence for the good or bad. And kindness actually can cause the DNA to put out better proteins and heal the body. That was an eye-opener. I experienced it, but I couldn't figure out why until, you know, some of the genome studies came out. And there's so many things that can help healing. Again, just being super kind, getting outside in the morning, exercise, all of those get rid of mutations and stimulate the right biochemicals to be made. I've read tons in the human literature in the last 6 years, and the conferences I go to on integrative medicine, you know, they all talk about forest bathing, getting outside with your dog is even better. And what's good for dogs are good for people. Exact same foods work well. The loving kindness works well for both ends of the leash. Yoga. I know you have yoga festivals. Dogs get up in the morning stretching, and cats. And then for people, yoga's been around 4,000 years or longer. You know, I've been doing it since the 70s. For me, I get up every morning and I ride my bike to the ocean and I surf. And it creates, surfers call it being stoked or blissed out, but it's you create serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, epinephrine, and then brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So essentially, we're fertilizing our brain. We're getting really high, making these chemicals, and just makes people really happy being outside and up in the morning. So those are, you know, kind of my simple guidelines.
Makes a lot of sense. And you know, nobody does a downward dog like a dog. It's called that for a reason, right? So
absolutely. Just having a dog makes people better people. And being a veterinarian is like the world's funnest job. You know, my dad was a lawyer like yourself. He said, all I do is deal with problems. But people are so kind in vet clinics. They're so kind with their animals. That's why at 72, I'm still practicing. It's just a lot of fun to see the interaction of both ends of the leash.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jamie. I really appreciate it. And I really am amazed at all you do in your many talents. So again, it's truly an honor. And thank you so much for the time.
That was Dr. Doug Coward. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss hyperbaric oxygen treatment for CTE on The Tonic.
Big Carrot is a worker-owned natural food market that's been committed to organic, local, non-GMO, and sustainable food systems since opening in Toronto in 1983. They're a one-stop shop for health and wellness, offering organic produce, natural grocery, natural beauty and skincare products, and a holistic dispensary for natural supplements and more. The Carrot Kitchen and coffee bars serve delicious meals and drinks using high-quality ingredients sourced from local farmers and suppliers that prioritize organic, non-GMO, and/or sustainable practices. Visit one of their two locations in Toronto today. Shop the Big Carrot on Instacart now. This cold and flu season, discover the power of medicinal mushrooms. Rich in antioxidants and known to naturally support your immune system, medicinal mushrooms are one of nature's most powerful defenders. Trusted by Canadians for over 20 years, CanPrev Natural Health now offers medicinal mushroom supplements. Every capsule combines both fruiting body extract and mycelium, providing the full spectrum of medicinal compounds for a full spectrum of benefits. Gentle enough for daily use so you can stay supported all season long. Now available at your local health food store.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
William Person is a former 9-year Team USA bobsled athlete whose career left him battling the devastating effects of CTE. At his lowest point, he could barely get up off the floor, lost in confusion, depression, and deteriorating brain. Hope came when he discovered hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which restored clarity in his thinking, color to his vision, and purpose in his life. Today, William's on a mission to raise awareness of brain damage in sports, the importance of protecting and healing the brain, and he's on a mission to open a nonprofit CTE recovery center to help athletes and veterans heal at no cost to them. Welcome to the show, William. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me.
For those who don't know, what is CTE?
Well, you know what? The best way to explain it where people understand it, if you watch the news and you look in the media and you hear about all these athletes who've been either murdering people or killing themselves, most of the time, you know, there's a death behind it. And when they check their brains, they find this this disturbance in the brain. It's like some type of plaque that builds up. They believe it's caused because of the repetitive hits to the head.
Was your CTE caused by like collisions with the bobsled, or is it just like when I see the sport on TV, and you know, being from Canada, we're all about our winter sports. You know, I see, you know, like the bobsled shakes and everything, and was it jarring, or were there actual collisions with you?
Well, there was a combination. Like I've had 7 crashes that I remember.
Wow.
However, what I know now about the sport is like every time I went down that track, if the ice wasn't perfectly smooth like glass, and we had a great run. So if we had a great run and ice is smooth, the G-forces are going to get you.
Right. Yeah.
Matter of fact, they tested the track in Canada. I guess the one in I think it's COP because we spent a lot of time up there. I think they said there was spikes of 84.5 G-forces. Now, let's compare that to like the space shuttle that does. I think the internet says 3, which doesn't make sense to me. Fighter pilots do 15, maybe.
Wow.
But they use pressure suits to keep them from blacking out. And we don't use anything. Like, if you look at our Olympic suits, they're spandex. You can see through them.
Yeah, right.
There's no protection in there at all. So,
yeah, but you're wearing a helmet, though, right? That I do know. Yeah?
I mean, you know what? When I first got into trouble and I filed the class action lawsuit, everybody asked me, didn't you wear a helmet? I laughed so hard. I was like, that's what I thought too. If I wore a helmet, I wouldn't have any problems. Matter of fact, most people have like a $90 helmet or $150 helmet. I had a $1,200 helmet and I'm in the same boat with the rest of the guys.
Yeah. I mean, if the U.S. Olympic program doesn't have the right helmets, who does?
Well, they usually don't give helmets. Like there was years where they never gave helmets. So you
go on. Really?
Yeah. People just show up with helmets they got from the pawn shop or motorcycle shop or Walmart or wherever they can get them from. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep. The one I had, my first helmet, it was laying around from my motorcycle. And that's the first helmet I started to race with.
Let's jump to symptomology. What was life like when you first started getting the symptoms of CTE?
Well, the first symptoms, I didn't recognize them. Like I thought I rationalized it. That's the best way to put it. For example, I had these things like in the middle of the night, I would panic. I had these panic attacks and I never had anxiety or anything like that before. And I would jump up and I had to turn the lights on really quick. And I always say the pictures on the wall will let me know where I'm at. Cause like in Germany, got those creepy pictures on the wall. The eyes follow you. And Canada, y'all have really cool pictures up there. You know, the Olympic Training Center is going to be concrete. Cinder walls painted. So you know, the walls always let me know. But I started telling myself, you know what? I'm only having these issues because I travel so much. I have such a great life. But the truth was, that wasn't the only red flag. Like one of the other ones, I hadn't seen my friends in Salt Lake City in quite a while. So I went down there to visit and we went out to a little club to shoot a little pool. And I think we had a beer or something like that, maybe. And my buddy looked at me. He's like, hey, man, there's your girlfriend over there, your ex-girlfriend. And I looked at her. I said, she sure is pretty, but, you know, I don't know her. And then she ran over and she jumped in my arms and I caught her, you know, and I was like, uh-oh, I guess I do know her. Hmm. And the truth was, instead of me realizing that I wasn't recognizing familiar faces anymore, I rationalized. I said, oh, I'm an athlete. I'm so strong. And, you know, I got muscles. You know, that's how most athletes think back then. You know, the ladies give you some attention, you know, but... And yeah, I was covering it up. Everything that happened to me that I should have caught, I was rationalizing.
You've spoken about, you know, sort of being so lost and confused and depressed that you even thought about ending your life. What drove you to keep on going? Because those feelings must be tough.
Okay. Yeah, man. Great question. Well, I was a counselor before I started the sport. I actually owned a youth treatment facility in Provo, Utah at the time. And so I've had hundreds and hundreds of clients, you know, and if I had clients that were suicidal, I taught them this little trick and it seemed to work. And like if today is Monday and I'm feeling bad and I feel suicidal, I'll tell myself, well, if today's a good day to die, then tomorrow will also be a good day. So it gives me one more day to think about it. So then I'll get to Tuesday. And when I'm feeling the same way, still an awful day, I'll say the same thing. If today's a good day to do it, then tomorrow will be a good day. So it just kept me moving the thing. I saw the trauma that suicide does to the family. And so I didn't want to leave that trauma on my family. And that's one of the reasons I didn't want to do it. And really all those lessons I taught people over the years is really what I think kind of helped save me.
Let's talk about the treatments that you ended up taking, and I presume you're still taking, and that's hyperbaric oxygen treatment.
Yes.
What made you decide to do that? And maybe you can walk us through what the sessions are like.
Man, I just found the video. The first time I tried the chamber, I made a video while I was inside. I don't remember doing that, but it was so dark and just creepy. I was literally saying, this is it. This is the last thing. There's nothing else for me. There was nothing for us out there for, you know, I was researching, asking doctors. And so I found a video one day. It was Joe Namath saying that he used hyperbaric oxygen to reverse his CTE symptoms. But, you know, one thing with him, he didn't leave details. He just said it worked. And I was a skeptic at that point. I had kind of given up. And so I went and I tried it. This is the crazy part. As soon as I spent 1 hour in that machine, as soon as I got out, my glasses are a little bit slightly tinted because I'm sensitive to lights, sounds, and smells now. So I go to grab my glasses and I put them on and I keep taking them off. And the salesman comes over. He said, "What's wrong?" And I'm just like, "Man, I don't think I need my glasses. Everything looks so crisp and beautiful and clear." And so at that point, I think I realized I don't think I had been seeing colors in a long time. I'm not quite sure on that point, but this thing, man, I went home. Man, my cloudiness was gone for 6 whole days. They allowed me to come back the following week at the end, like the Friday. And then my cloudiness was gone for 9 days. And so this thing was not a fluke. I knew it was working. And so I've been doing it ever since.
Do you know the science behind what the hyperbaric oxygen is actually doing to your body when it's doing it?
Well, I know how it was explained to me. They said it makes your body believe it's like 7 to 9 feet underwater. So your blood is more like a gas. And so since it's a gas, it can now get through all the blockages and it can go on and oxygenate all the cells in your body is what they say. And man, it's just that thing right there. Is just it's a heaven sent because like, even to this day right now, if I take about, say a month away from this thing, like sometimes I start to get a little bit antsy and a little bit cloudy again. So for a lot of people, they get that permanent relief. For me, as of now, it's not permanent. But it's given me life back. Like,
yeah. And I understand you want to do that for others too. And yeah. And so you have a vision for CTE Recovery Center and you've launched a GoFundMe campaign. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, actually it came from your Canadian athletes because some of your Canadian athletes up there were struggling and they actually helped me connect some of the dots. Like me not recognizing familiar faces was something I hid from people for a long time because I was so embarrassed about it. And one of your athletes made a video about it, Christina Smith. And man, when I saw that video, I had just told people the truth about what I was dealing with. Yeah, so I was telling Christina about it, and she was telling me that you guys have a hard time getting H-spot up there, no hyperbaric oxygen chambers up there. The regulations are different. And I was like, you know what? I just bought a little house in the Midwest, and sitting there, I said, I got a chamber in my house. I said, maybe I'll just start inviting athletes to come down. And that's kind of how it started. It was because of Christina Smith.
So what message do you want to send to athletes, soldiers, anybody who might be suffering with CTE or their families today?
Well, these messages, they won't understand because there's a lot of things here we didn't hit upon. But like, if it wasn't for the people around me who love me, I would have never figured out what this was because doctors didn't figure it out. The Olympic team wasn't sharing information. There was an article called Sledhead. I would say check that article, Sledhead, written by the New York Times. It gives a lot of information. But this is only, I believe that only your loved ones are going to be able to help you with this thing. So I would say surround yourself with your loved ones because everybody else is like the athletes. We, for some reason, we cannot see the trauma on ourselves. We can see it in everybody else. Like we can look at other people, we're judging them like, oh my God, look what that guy's doing. But we're not looking at what we're doing. We just can't see it.
If somebody's interested in supporting your efforts, what should they do? Where should they go?
Well, first of all, you can find me on social media, One Man with a Chamber. That's my TikTok channel. If you have loved ones that are struggling with this stuff, like and there's a lot of misdiagnosis. If they're doing things that's out of character, look up my social media channel and I'll help you through it. Because sometimes it's some misdiagnosis out there. And then also, I'm setting up for not-for-profit, but in the meantime, we're doing a crowdfunding to help us raise the capital so that I can provide that service for free. It has to be for free because it's too expensive. People will not come for this service. They're, you know, people, you know, they're making life decisions like, and am I going to go get this hyperbaric chamber that might not work for me? Because people don't understand how this thing works. Like they don't understand how powerful it is. And I'm a walking testament because I'm the worst case scenario because I literally probably had hundreds and hundreds of concussions because I did that sport for 9 years. I took between 1 to 6 rides a day for 4 to 5 days a week for about 9 years. And that's about for 4 to 5 months of the year. So I'm the worst case scenario. And I think that might be why I still have to rely on that machine so much. And other people, where they get that, these NFL guys are going in and they're coming out just permanent relief. Like, I was so frustrated at one point. I was just like, wow, why not me? But I had to learn to just accept the blessings I have and keep moving forward. Like, I can talk again. Like, two and a half years ago, I couldn't talk. I was literally in dementia. I was lost in my own community that I lived in for, I keep saying 5 years, but it was more like 7 years. Like, I was only walking a half a mile. I would get lost coming back, walking a straight line. Yeah, it was really bad.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today to tell us about that.
And thank you for having me.
That was William Person. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss the path to sobriety on The Tonic.
I'd like to give a shout out to our longstanding sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com.
This cold and flu season, discover the power of medicinal mushrooms. Rich in antioxidants and known to naturally support your immune system, medicinal mushrooms are one of nature's most powerful defenders. Trusted by Canadians for over 20 years, CanPrev Natural Health now offers medicinal mushroom supplements. Every capsule combines both fruiting body extract and mycelium, providing the full spectrum of medicinal compounds for a full spectrum of benefits. Gentle enough for daily use so you can stay supported all season long. Now available at your local health food store.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Christopher Najera is a certified life coach, a public speaker, and author who spent 35 years battling alcohol use disorder. He speaks from a place of raw honesty and lived truth. A weekend drinker who turned to daily drinking, alcohol consumed him, and he sought outpatient treatment. After seeing others suffering, he realized he didn't want to end up on dialysis or a liver transplant list like his peers. It was in those moments that real change was the best outcome for his future. Born and raised in El Paso, Texas, Najera balances his work as a life coach and author with mentoring others on the path to sobriety. He lives sober, advocates for healthier choices, and proves that transformation is possible at any stage of life. For more information, you can visit www.thehardtruthaf.com or connect with the author on Facebook at The Hard Truth Stopping Alcohol. Welcome to the show, Chris. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me today.
So we're just coming off of Sober October. Why do you think a short break, let's say 30 days, can be such a powerful starting point for change?
I think the biggest thing that we have to understand is why do you think a short-term break can be? The reason is you want to give yourself 30 days to really understand your relationship with alcohol. It gives you a chance to reflect and understand, okay, I do drink on weekends only. Oh, I only drink on, per se, on certain occasions, or I drink every other day. And you want to understand your relationship. And really, there has to be a point where you say, okay, I want to take a little break and I want to see how I feel. Are you going to get a clear mind? Are you going to feel better at the end of the 30 days? But I think a break is going to be beneficial for you, for your mind, for your body, for just your overall being. And a powerful starting point, I would say, you know what, I'm going to take a 30-day break and just see how I feel. And then at that point, we can guide you in certain directions.
So you had your own epiphany, and you finally decided enough is enough. Much the same with me in food. Like, I was morbidly obese and I just kind of had enough. I was being very unhealthy, very different than alcohol. But the thought process, I think, was the same. What for you was the tipping point?
So here's the thing for me is when I was in, at the end of my drinking, it was based on the fact that I went to the hospital for an abscess. You know, I grew up here in El Paso, Texas, where alcohol is very prevalent. It's regular. It's in our culture. It's in, you know, everything we do. And I didn't know all the things I found out after I stopped, and it was alarming. But I think when I was in the hospital with an abscess, and I'm thinking, the doctor's looking at me and says, well, how much do you drink? And I'm like, well, I drink whiskey and beer. And he says, how much? And I said, oh, he says, his eyes got big and he goes, okay, we're going to have to get you on something to curb you off of withdrawal. And I'm withdrawal. And I was so far in my addiction, I didn't think I had a problem. And that was the scary part. And I think after that abscess, getting my stomach pumped and telling me that, you know, if I would have continued, I could have died. That was really the turning point. And I decided, you know, enough of this. I want to research this and find out what it was. And really, that's what sparked my book, The Hard Truth, Stopping Alcohol.
Is, you mentioned it sort of being a cultural thing, like everybody drinks, but was this sort of like, how shall I put this, familial? In other words, you had family members who were also drinking? Was it that ingrained in your lifestyle?
Well, you got to understand, right here, we're in a border town. So Juarez, Mexico is literally a walk over a bridge and you're there. Yep. The drinking age is 18 years old. And my family did drink. Yes, my family did drink. And so it's like I say, it's very prevalent in any the culture here. It's Hispanic culture here in the border town. And everybody drinks on every occasion. And you don't see it as wrong until I didn't see it as wrong my whole life. And again, I was a weekend drinker and then turned at the end after 2020 when COVID hit and all that over here. I started drinking more and more. And then at the end, I couldn't stop. So, but yes, to answer your question, my family did drink. I wouldn't say heavy drinking, but he was, a person that would drink in occasions when there was people around. And I didn't see it as wrong at that point, you know, my whole life.
Your program starts with deciding to stop. Why is that mental shift so important? And how can people prepare themselves to make it stick?
The biggest thing is this, you have to want it 100%. You have to want to stop. I mean, if you don't see it as a problem, I tell everybody this, you know, you get the blood work, see how your body's doing, because the numbers are there. The numbers are scary and alarming. And it's a lot of people are getting sick from alcohol. 400 million people are suffering from alcohol use disorder to this date. 3 million people die every single year from alcohol related causes. So I think, you know, that's the biggest thing is you have to understand that when you're going to go through certain things and if you want to take a break and everything, you've got to want to do it. You've got to inside your mind, you say, okay, I want to take a break. I want to see how I'm going to feel. And then in those first, you know, 30 days, give yourself 30 days and see how you're going to feel. And if you're feeling the headaches, if you're feeling the certain irritability, if you're having the cravings, then your dopamine levels in your brain, which alcohol depletes over time, you're pretty much addicted. And you need to evaluate that because kidneys and liver disease is really prevalent and nobody talks about it. And that's what really sparked the book as well.
You know, I decided to get healthy because I was terrified of the health outcomes. Which is a good reason to not be obese, but it's also when you scare yourself like that, in some ways it makes it harder, right? Because the stakes are higher, right? All of a sudden the stakes become real. Therefore, if you don't succeed, you know, that can even make things worse. Did you ever worry about that when you were at that stage?
You know, the thing with alcohol is this, is that you don't see it as a problem when you're in it. And so really, I think at the end of the day, I didn't know I had a problem. And that was the scariest part. And I think for most people that drink regularly, they don't see it as a problem. But you got to really take it into consideration as if, you know, if it's affecting you when your relationships. And the thing with this is it affects people around you when you're drinking too much. And that's what people need to understand. But
No. I understand that aspect of it. But when you finally made the decision to make a life change, right?
Yeah.
And you did so because you were, you know, from what I'm hearing from you, it's because you realized you had a problem and it was going to impact you significantly from a health perspective. Doesn't that in some ways make it harder? Because the stakes are higher. Like once you realize what the threat is, it becomes, you know, it can be frightening, right?
Well, it is frightening. And, but again, like, yeah, it's frightening to the point where it's like, I don't want to go through those things, you know? And when I saw the issues that it was causing me, yes, it was part of the scared of it. But at the same time, I didn't feel scared when I was in it. And that's where I'm saying it's so scary, you know?
All right, let's move ahead to like the first week. So if somebody makes the decision to get sober and your book kind of addresses those 30 days, what does the first week look like for somebody who's trying to make that change?
The first week is this. You're going to get rid of everything you have, all the liquor in your house. You need to get rid of it. And the most important thing in your first week is you have to want it. You have to say, you know what, I'm going to take 30 days and I'm going to evaluate my relationship. And you have to give it 110%, not 100%. On that extra 10% is to really get through it. In my book, I have, you know, the five things that are most important to you in your life. And whether that be your family, your children, your job, whatever that may be, those five things is why you're going to stop for the next 30 days. And then you go into the next couple of days in the affirmations where you're going to be writing in your journal. And then you're going to start asking yourself questions in the first 3 days. Okay, the third day is write a letter to yourself as your best friend and why you want to stop alcohol and why you think you should stop alcohol for 30 days and what do you want to get out of it. So really, it's a matter of really giving it your 110% and making sure you follow through with it. Because at the end, in the book, I created everything you would need in those 30 days to guide you to, you know, hopefully stop for good and live your best life.
I sense that you're candid about the dangers of alcohol and how it impacted your life. What's the one hard truth you wish everybody knew about being addicted to alcohol?
The biggest thing, and you have to understand this, is I didn't know anything for 34 years drinking. When I started researching, I was sitting in an outpatient and the guy next to me was getting a liver transplant. And he was saying, yeah, I don't even know if my liver is going to take to my body. I don't even know how long I'm going to live. You know, and when I started hearing that, I would get chills on my body and I would just, it would create this scare for me. But the biggest thing is I want everybody to understand this, is that the numbers are real. The numbers are not hidden, but nobody ever talks about it. And that's 3 million people die every single year from alcohol use disorder. And the big thing is this. It's linked to 7 fatal cancers. And this is all through the World Health Organization. This is not, I'm not making this up, but it gets blinded by it, by the alcohol companies make it fun and good, but it's not fun and good because it's affecting families. It's affecting children. It's affecting people, everybody around them. But those are really the two main things that I was scared for me. And I'm like, wow, nobody knows this. And everybody I talk to, over 100 of people, I ask them, do you know how many people pass away or alcohol-related causes of death and how many people die? And not one person knew. And that's when I was like, wow, this is something that nobody talks about, nobody considers, and not even the alcohol companies. They turn the other way about it. And that's the biggest scare. And that's what I want everybody to understand, that it is a major problem around the world.
Time for one last quick question. And that is, for anybody who's listening, who wants to stop but isn't sure if they can, what's your message to them?
The biggest thing is this. If you stop, you're going to find the person that you were when you were in a child and before alcohol disrupted your life. And I'm 2 years and 4 months going about hitting 4 months. And I'm about the first year, I was like, everything started clearing up. And again, I was just a weekend drinker, you know, or occasions. And then it turned into everyday drinking in the last about 10 years. And then I started getting liver issues and the stomach issues and all that stuff. And luckily I made it out, but there's so many people that don't. And I think the message that to you, that if you want to stop, do it for 30 days, give it a chance, give it to see how you feel. And if you start realizing, hey, you know what? I am getting headaches. Hey, I am getting this, because when you're drinking regularly, you don't see it. And so I would say to anyone listening and you want to stop, but what best thing to do is maybe even get my book and try to follow 30 days and learn a relationship with alcohol. That's what I would recommend to do first, right off the bat, and get rid of all alcohol in your house.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Dr. Michael Brandt, Dr. Doug Coward, William Person, and Chris Nahara. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to the Tonic Newsletter. Now distributed once a week, the Tonic Newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you know you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.